Chapter 16. The Rescue. We learn the full story as we were hurrying out of the geyser basin. As we knew, JJ had recruited Zach and Auron to go look for Sasquatch in the abandoned gold mine on the Oive Corral. When Candace hadn't heard back from JJ after lunch, Sydney and Gavin had ridden out to see if anything had gone wrong. And their worst fears had been confirmed. There had been a cave-in at the mine. The Krautheimers had called the local fire department to organize a rescue, but Summer understandably wanted to get back to the ranch as quickly as possible so she could help out in any way. I would have done the same if my own parents had been in trouble, and I was concerned about JJ too. We walked right past Old Faithful and headed for the parking lot. We were the only people going that way. The geyser began erupting as we left, so crowds were racing in from the lot to see it before it finished, forcing us to weave through them like salmon swimming upstream. I was frustrated to miss the eruption. All I could see of it was a glimpse of the great steaming column of water in the distance, but this enabled us to get out of the parking lot faster. Once the eruption was over, hundreds of tourists would be heading for their cars at once. However, we still had to get through many miles of crowded roads to reach the park exit. We got stuck in one traffic jam for 15 minutes, which turned out to have been caused by Taurons stopping in the middle of the road to see a common white-tailed deer. Then, once we got to the ranch, we had to get horses and ride out to the mine. So it was nearly 2 hours from the time we had heard about the accident until the time we arrived on the scene. Jasmine led us there. I had to use a different horse than Molasses because Molasses was still recuperating from that morning's ride. I was given a feistier horse named Starbuck, who was a handful to control. Since I wasn't that talented a rider, I got bounced around a lot more than either Jasmine or Summer did. And so after our ride to the mine, my ribs, which had been sore since the morning, were aching once again. I didn't realize it until we arrived, but my entire knowledge of what a mine looked like was based on the movies. I had expected a large tunnel through the mountain, wide enough for railroad tracks and tram cars, but what I found instead was much less impressive. The passage that led into the mountain was a narrow, rough-hewn gap, not much wider or taller than an adult human. There were no railroad tracks, although some ancient mining equipment that had been abandoned a century earlier was strewn outside the entrance. The metal was so rusted that it had fallen apart, so it was hard to tell what anything had originally been. The mine looked more like a cave, which was why it might have appealed to a bear to hide inside. It had been boarded over until recently. Now the rotted wood and warning signs had been pulled off and piled near the entrance. The fire department's rescue squad was already there. They, along with all the other adults, Evan and Melissa, had formed a line heading into the mine. Given the mine's remoteness and narrowness, the system to remove the landslide inside was decidedly primitive. Everyone was simply lifting the rocks out by hand and passing them from one person to another. They all looked tired and sweaty. Evan, who was at the end of the line, was tossing the rocks aside. There was a pile 3 feet tall, indicating they had been at this a while.
"They're here,"
Evan called out when he saw us, and word quickly passed up the line. Then, to my surprise, word quickly came back from inside.
"See if Teddy can come in."
"Why me?" I asked.
"It's pretty tight in there," Evan explained, "and you're the smallest guy."
"I'm smaller than he is," Summer said angrily. "Why don't they want me? Don't they think a girl can do this?"
Jasmine placed a hand on her shoulder, giving her the message that now wasn't the time to start an argument.
"I'm sure you can help your father out here," she said. "I'll bet they could use some more people on the rock line."
"That's right,"
Evan agreed, although he had a look on his face that indicated that maybe the idea was to prevent Summer from seeing how dire the situation was.
He tossed me a hard hat with a headlamp attached. I put it on and hurried into the mine. Inside, it was even narrower, which made sense. The easiest place to excavate would have been the entrance. The inner tunnel appeared to have been hacked by hand with pickaxes through almost solid rock. The walls were jagged and irregular, with plenty of sharp corners. At many points, the tunnel was no wider than a few feet, and the ceiling repeatedly dropped low enough that adults had to stoop. Cold water dripped steadily from above and pooled on the floor. Back in the day, it would have been incredibly dark inside, lit only by gas lamps. It seemed like a nightmarish place to work. The adults all flattened themselves along the rough-hewn walls so that I could pass, and even then there were times when I could barely fit. Melissa, Heidi, and Candace were stationed right inside the entrance, although Candace immediately hurried out to talk to Summer. Then came Pete, Ray, Karina, Arturo, Gavin, Mom, Dad, and Sydney. Everyone wore hard hats with headlamps. Mom and Dad happened to be in a junction in the mine where two other dank, narrow tunnels split off, so they had a bit more space. Mom clutched my shoulder as I passed, stopping me briefly.
"Just so you know, you don't have to do this if it scares you too much," she said.
"Do what?" I asked. "You'll see," Dad said. Beyond them were seven big, brawny firefighters, and one older firefighter who seemed to be in charge. He was positioned near the front of the line. Not far ahead, the tunnel had caved in. A jumble of broken rocks and dirt completely blocked the mine, although the firefighters had made some progress in excavating it. They had been working from the top and had dug a narrow passage back into the rockfall. It was still too small and tight for the firefighters to get inside, so Daisy Creek was doing it. She would stick her entire torso in the passage, pry out a big rock, and then pass it down the line. It was obviously hard work, and even in the dim light, I could see that Daisy was sweaty and coated with dirt. I realized what everyone needed me to do. The older firefighter stepped out of the line to greet me.
"Teddy, I'm Chief Hogan. Has anyone explained the situation to you?"
"No," I replied, "but I'm guessing you need me to take over for Daisy?"
"That's right. She's been at this for over an hour. As you can see, we're trying to clear an opening through this blockage as fast as we can. If we can do that, they'll be able to get fresh air, and we'll be able to pass them food and water. Once that's taken care of, it'll buy us some time to get the rest of these rocks out. The problem is, this blockage goes farther back than we expected, and all the adults except Daisy are too big to fit in that opening. I hate to ask a kid to go in there, but..."
"I'll do it," I said.
"You don't have to."
Daisy Creek emerged from the narrow passage, clutching a rock the size of her head, and passed it on. She looked to Chief Hogan.
"I can keep going. There's no need to ask Teddy to put his life at risk."
"You've done more than your fair share," Chief Hogan told her. "It's time for you to take a break."
"I don't need one," Daisy replied. "I can keep going."
"Maybe so," the chief said, "but I'm ordering you to stop. The last thing I need right now is another emergency. So go take five and get yourself some water, or I'll have my men drag your stubborn rear end out."
Daisy cracked a slight smile, then nodded agreement.
"All right, chief, but I'll be ready to go again if you need me."
Before she left, she grabbed my hands and gave me a heartfelt look.
"Be careful, Teddy."
I noticed that, despite Daisy's insistence that she could go on, she appeared exhausted. There was a weariness in her eyes, and her fingertips were raw and bloodied from dragging out rocks.
"I will," I said.
"Good."
Daisy headed back down the tunnel toward daylight. Chief Hogan added,
"She's right. You need to exercise caution. It's going to be really tight in there, and if we tell you to get out right away, then you get out right away, okay? Don't be a hero.
We don't want another cave-in.
All right, I said, then asked, how are they doing?
We don't know,
Chief Hogan said gravely. And in that moment, I understood why Summer hadn't been asked to do this. There was a chance that her father wasn't alive on the other side of the cave-in. I climbed up the rockfall and peered into the narrow passage. Daisy had managed to excavate about 3 feet back. I had thought that the main tunnels of the mine were claustrophobic, but this was far worse. It was dank and muddy and full of weird cave insects and broken stones that scratched me as I reached inside. There wasn't even enough room for me to wear my hard hat. I had to set a flashlight inside so I could see what I was doing. Above me, there was a new ceiling of stones that had wedged in the hole after the other ones had fallen. But if they went, a whole new cave-in would come down right on top of me. I figured I had better work quickly. I started pulling out rocks as fast as I could. Sometimes they came out easily. Sometimes it took me a while to figure out how to work them free. At the same time, the firefighters were taking apart the wall of rocks, pulling away bigger stones to give me more room to get in and out. Still, the passage I was in remained disturbingly small. I kept banging my head on the low ceiling and scraping my knuckles on rocks. There was dirt and mud everywhere, in my nose and my eyes and my mouth. But I still kept digging because 3 people's lives depended on it. Every now and then, Chief Hogan would shout for JJ or Zach or Aaron, but no shouts ever came back. The passage was getting deeper. I had cleared another foot of rock away and was wondering how much farther the blockage could go when I heard something. It was a muffled noise from behind the rocks. It seemed to have a slight Texan twang. JJ? I yelled. Teddy? The voice was faint but unmistakable. Yes, I cried. That was followed by the sounds of 3 different people whooping on the other side. People who sounded like they were all okay and thrilled to hear help was on the way. Even so, I figured I should check. Is everyone all right? Yes, JJ yelled back. Though the faster you can get through here, the better we'll be. I retreated from the passage and gave everyone the good news. They're alive! Word quickly passed down the line, accompanied by whoops of joy. I returned my attention to clearing the passage with new vigor, but I instantly discovered a problem. A rock the size of a watermelon was wedged ahead of me, blocking my access to them. I couldn't possibly move it, not without getting all the other rocks out of the way first. I reported this to Chief Hogan. He frowned for a moment, then said, Is there any room around it, or is it blocking the entire passage? I think there's room around it.
Then that's all we need to get air through, which is the priority.
He handed me a large chisel.
Tell them to start pulling out stuff on their end as fast as they can. Then you work the areas around the rock with this.
I forwarded his directions. JJ responded that he understood, and then I heard the sounds of rocks being removed on the far side. I aimed the flashlight at the blockage, then chipped away at the rocks and dirt around the big rock with the chisel, wedging out what I could. I ended up focusing my attention on 1 3-inch-wide gap at the base of the big rock, excavating an even smaller passage, driving the chisel deeper and deeper into it. Although, after a while, I had pushed it as far as it could go. It was being blocked by dirt and rock. And then it wasn't. Something fell away at the tip of the chisel, and air began flowing around me, as though it too had been stuck in the passage and now could suddenly move.
You're through, JJ yelled, and this time there was nothing muffling his voice.
I pulled back and aimed the flashlight through the tiny passage. I saw an eyeball at the other end. JJ whooped with excitement. I could hear Zach and Aaron behind him. I backed out of the passage and told the others, We're through! I can see them! A chorus of elated cheers echoed through the mine.
Nice work, Teddy, Chief Hogan said. You're done here. Move out.
I remembered what he had said and stepped aside. Are you sure?
We've got this now. They're going to live thanks to you. But this will be tricky work, getting those rocks out and making sure we don't have another collapse. The best thing you can do is go home. Get yourself cleaned up and bandage those knuckles.
I looked down at my hands. Beneath the mud caked on them, my knuckles were scraped and bleeding.
Tell me y'all brought some water for us, Zach called through the passage. I'm so dry, I'm worried nothing's going to come out when I pee except sand.
It's on the way,
Chief Hogan yelled back. Sure enough, a device was being passed up the line, a water tank with a hand pump and some long, thin plastic tubes attached. The idea, I realized, was to snake the tubes through the tiny gap in the rocks and then pump water through. I was in the way, so I slipped back past the firemen to head out. Mom and Dad hugged me happily when I got to them.
Good work, Dad said proudly.
We need everyone to clear out of here, a firefighter yelled. Now that we can get them air and water, we're going to take it slow and make sure we do this as safely as possible. I know all of you want to help, but the best thing you can do right now is give us room to do our jobs.
Everyone filed back outside. When I emerged into the sunlight, it was almost blinding. While my eyes were adjusting, someone locked their arms around me so hard it almost squeezed the air out of me, then peppered my face with kisses.
I hope that's summer, I said.
You taste like mud, she replied. I don't think I've ever seen such a dirty person in my entire life.
My vision returned enough to find her face right in front of mine. Now that she knew her father was alive, she was beaming with excitement. The rest of our group was gathered around, looking extremely relieved. Despite her exhaustion, Daisy was doing a jig of happiness with Jasmine. Everyone looked ready to celebrate. Except Candace. She was chewing a fingernail nervously.
Are we sure they're going to be okay?
They'll be fine, Heidi told her reassuringly. Now that they can breathe, the worst is over. Chief Hogan can afford to take his time and be careful now, which is what he'll do. He's gotten people out of far worse scrapes than this.
How long do you think that'll be? Candace asked.
Could be a few hours, Sydney told her. Or maybe even longer.
Candace groaned.
And we're just supposed to sit here and wait?
No, Heidi said. The fire department has this under control. We can trust them. In the meantime, maybe we should find something to take your mind off this.
Like what?
Candace asked.
How do you folks feel about a rodeo?
Melissa asked.